Thanks very much. It's an honour to come down to the city of Cork and to perform at OVA. We've heard great things about it. We'll be doing mainly a programme of poems from our latest album, which is Going Gone, and a few from the early album also. And there's a strong element of nostalgia about the album, and I'm a little concerned here about the age profile of the audience. I think we've raised the average age by about 15 or 16 years, if it was. But hopefully, anyway, some of the things we'll be talking about, you might have heard about them from your parents or grandparents. And the nostalgic element is partly driven by the fact that we grew up on a farm which has given way to the M7 motorway, so we've obliterated. And lots of other things have changed, of course, in our lifetime. We're going to start actually with a poem about some trivial things that have changed and along we're around. It's called Lost to View, and the music is called Saved to Memory. Saved to memory, but lost to view, my crimson polka dot cravat and my rasping plastic blue kazoo. My first romantic rendezvous with awkward gestures and chit-chat. Saved to memory, though lost to view. Rings and cufflinks once worn new, a feathered blue-gray dandy hat, and my rasping plastic blue kazoo. Scrapbook cuttings sealed with glue, and posters from my student flat, saved to memory, though lost to view. Those pretty teenage girls I knew, and fell for without caveat, and my rasping plastic blue kazoo. I bid them all a fond adieu, pictures, letters, this and that, saved to memory, though lost to view, and my rasping plastic blue kazoo. Does anybody know what a kazoo is or was? Yeah. I was one of the best kazoo players in the West.
Did you bring it?
Yeah.
Coming back.
Okay. The title of our album is Going Gone, and the title of this poem is called Going. And most people would assume that it has to do with just things passing and with maybe the idea of an auctioneer's call before he brings down the gavel on a sale. But another dimension to going in this poem is the the surname of the local landlord in our locality, a man called Charles Going, the last landlord before the Land Commission acquired the estate. It was distributed by the distributed among the locals. In our house when we grew up, there was a picture on the wall, an old hunting scene from the house, from Craig House. And our granduncle was a skilled horseman, a whipper-in and a hounds master and so on. So we heard a lot of stories from him about the estate and his time there. So this poem is all about that. Basically it starts with the picture and recalls a time long, long past. It's called Going. And the music is an old hunting song called Gé Cén John Peel. It's not the DJ John Peel, it's an old huntsman from Cumberland in north of England. Tom, by the fireside, skin and bone, rosary beads, flaxen hair, flush on a head, aware with reveries. Four walls, wallpaper, dark wood framing a tableau in sepia. Declivity of big house eaves, tree trunks towering to a rookery, a pack of tranquil spotted dogs, sober riders on patient steeds, Charles Going, hard hat, Esquire, ramrod back twipper in beside, bony face, cap shadowed, primed for a Midland Odyssey. Breathless hunts in Kennedy, Shenrone, samplings of whiskey behind cellar doors, and pints of pipe of Rochelle Porter. A petrified fox slung in a cradle of ivy twined about a river arch. Drum roll of thundering hooves and the bagpipe ululations of foxhounds. Pre-EU, pre-Land Commission, lost world, faded as wallpaper, picture. Flown like the tide of the surging Nor. Going estates, no longer going, but going, going, gone. I don't know how many people here remember the music and the pin-up stars of the early 1960s and later 60s. The poem is a kind of rewrite of Patrick Kavanagh's epic, or at least it borrows a line from it and kind of bowdlerizes it, and I hope it doesn't give too much offense to any people who have great reverence for Kavanagh and what he stands for. It's called Sods, and the music is from the 1960s as well, a tune called Happy Birthday, Sweet 16. When I was knee-high to Brenda Lee, I fell hopelessly in love with Farah Diba. It was love against all the odds, she being much older and a non-Catholic, not to mention her engagement to the Shah of Persia. Nothing ever came of it, of course. Subsequently, I lost my heart to others. Connie Stevens, Sandra Dee, oh yes, and Jean Shrimpton. Julie Christie, Tuesday Weld. Invariably, my love was unrequited. Then, sensing that I was just a plain, ordinary sod, I resolved to settle for local goddesses with names like Maura, Sheila, Mary, Anne, from places like Bird Hill and Drumineer, and it was fun. I inclined to shed my dreams of London, Beverly Hills and Tehran, took up the guitar, grew a beard, and became captain of the local rugby club. Sods make their own importance. Sometimes a word grabs you and you realise you hadn't heard it before. You also realise that you'll never forget it, or it'll never leave your word store again. And this word came to me in November 1963. And again, apologies to Philip Larkin for doing a bit of a number on one of these poems as part of the intro to this poem. It's called Assassin. The word assassin began in 1963, which was time enough for me, between the flight of the third man and our first black and white TV. You know the story, Texas Book Depository, grassy knoll. Oswald, the rifle with telescopic sights. The wounded governor, dying president. Beautiful first lady in the blood-stained suit. Then, an assassin assassinated the assassin, who some say was not an assassin at all. And my word depository would never be assassin-free again. And indeed there had been assassins long before my so-called soon-to-be-assassinated assassin, as Caesar, Lincoln, Trotsky, Gandhi would, if they could testify, testify. And there would be more assassins, and near assassins, and would-be assassins, in Memphis, and Cairo, and Rome, and everywhere, all with their sights on bigger fish than me, until a slight assassin in a miniskirt, killer smile and waves in her hair, shot an arrow from a Ferris wheel at a carnival in Tipperary, bullseye straight through my unsuspecting heart. Protolemian, I understand it means a wedding song or a wedding poem of sorts. And I wrote it on the occasion of the wedding of a young man from our neck of the woods, back by the Shannon, son of one of my best friends. And he was marrying a girl from Mississippi State. So I was a little bit at a loss for how to write about her. I knew the groom, a little about the bride. So I came up with the idea of using the great rivers, Mississippi and the Shannon, as kind of metaphors for the union of the two young people. And the music again represents the rivers as well, and the cultures of the two places. Proto-Linya. Ceaseless sweep of big muddy water, carry the soul of Magnolia State, spirit of forest and cotton field, soul of Caucasian, Negro, Choctaw, spirit of Jackson, Natchez, Starkville, born by dugout and paddle steamer, past bluff and levee and delta silt, down to the Gulf of Mexico. And spirit of Shannon, wind and surge, by long meadow and royal fort, glide underneath the white bird's hill, and carry a tale of she and Audrey, of Norse and Norman, of Gael and Gowan, with barge and cruiser and sailing skiff, past Dearmer and Dronia's silken bed, to the yawning sea by lovers leap. Beneath white horses of boundless ocean, currents course, eddy and mingle, waters of Clare and cool Tipperary, caressing the tide of warm Mississippi, ferried by Gulf Stream and Atlantic Drift. And it's based on the notion, well, originally on the notion that there are two types of people, those who believe the glass is half full and those who think the glass is half empty. And then I discovered a third category. When we were young, our father was a chairman, and once when I was about 8 or 9 years of age, sitting down at a table on a Saturday night, a neighbour of his who was also a chairman was sitting with us, and Cork and Clare were playing championship hurling the following day. I suppose there's no need to guess who was going to win in the 1950s between Clare and Cork. But for the sake of conversation, somebody asked the neighbour, Mick Tully, how do you think Clare will do tomorrow? And he came up with the inspired answer. He said, "We'll be beat, but we won't be beat much." I like that attitude. You know, kind of a confident defeatism. So this poem came out of that idea, not by much, and Austin's tune is part of the journey goes with it. I forgot to mention that after the assassin poem, the tune Austin plays his own composition called Heart Flutter. But this is part of the journey and not by much. Are you glass two-thirds empty or cup half-full? Never say never, or clutch your straws, trusting to karma or to Santa Claus. Are you rose-tinted glasses or back to the wall? Are you keep smiling through or dancer on air, blind-eyeing the elephant in the room? A counter of chickens or a prophet of doom? A wringer of hands from the slough of despair? So, make your prediction as your team takes the field. Look on the bright side, or give up the ghost. wave out your banner, or send for a crutch, or sit poker-faced until all is revealed, like the realist, pessimist, shrewder than most, who divined we'd be bait, but we won't be bait. The next one is called Romeo and Juliet, and it's basically kind of a mix and gathering of Shakespeare and Mark Knopfler and Bernstein and Sondheim, West Side Story and so on, all mixed into a pot and stirred, and this is what came out anyway. The melody might be familiar as well, the melody is. Sondheim on the Arbat, Shakespeare in the Bronx, Knopfler in Verona, Bernstein in Dublin, all sing of the tragedy of star-crossed lovers. Maria of the balcony, Romeo of the fire escape, Natasha of the airline, Seamus of the Ford Focus, Venula of the bedsit, Vladimir of the streetlight, Juliet of the tennis court, Tony of the subway. All the star-crossed lovers whose partings were such sweet sorrow. He loved her like the stars above. She loved him till she died. A place for them, somewhere, a place for them. It was just that the time was wrong. He being a Muslim, she a Catholic. He an executive, she a carer. He too old, she too young. He on the dole, she on TV. He a Montague, she a Capulet. Discovered that I probably invented a new verse form. At least I haven't come across anything like it since. And basically it comes down to starting off with a line, with a double rhyme at the end, and then just keeping that double rhyme going for as long as possible. No other variation. So after this, a bit on hell is a daddle, and a sonnet is a child's play. I'm thinking of patenting it, or at least charging time and a half for reading it. It's called An Eye For. Michelle Pfeiffer is a lady you could die for. Tell a tall tale or a lie for. Eat a plate of humble pie for. Trade your girlfriend or your wife for. Become a traitor or a spy for. Kiss your house and car goodbye for. Hang your mother out to dry for. Face a bullet or a knife for. Do some time or even life for. I give an eye for an eye for. Still have an eye for.
Where that melody was last? Yeah, we as UMC said there, we've been collaborating for about 3 or 4 years. And but before that, even though Mike wrote the first songs that were ever written in our house, he moved on quickly to poetry. He went to the higher form. And I had to pick up the songwriting. So I started writing songs and I had a songwriter career. And then when people stopped listening to my songs in the 90s, I started to see what I could do with the guitar, and I started composing pieces. And some of the early ones I was a bit insecure about them. So I decided that I'd add some spoken word and see what happens, see what I compensate. And so one of the pieces that I wrote was, it was called Train of Thought. And the spoken word was the story of the trains that used to pass through our neck of the woods, passing through Bird Hill Station. Bird Hill, where we come from, is in North Tipperary, it's between Limerick and Nina. And the trains used to go by, and we knew the times of all the trains we passed by because they served a very useful purpose for us. Anyway, that was my little bit of prose or spoken word. Later, I found that Mike had written on the same subject, and again dealing with the trains and expanding it, so he'll pick it up from what he did with the lyric. You'll find out the purpose that the train served very early in the song, in the spoken word, the rap, the poem, all the bunch of them.
Okay, the music is called Train of Thought, and the poem is called Kilmasnella Bridge. Kilmasnella Bridge is a bridge a few miles away from the village of Bird Hill, and a few things about it. As a child, I always regarded it as the end of our locality, our neighbourhood. Anything beyond, once you crossed over to Kilmasnella Bridge, you were into the big world, the big vast world outside right there. And with Cork, just the Cork team as well, I think a trucker was once killed on that bridge, and I think it was from Cork, back in the 50s. So it was a dangerous hairpin bridge. It was dangerous, and it also represented a landmark, a kind of a stepping stone into the big world. So, anyway. Beyond the black and amber coil, where death played hide and seek and found, lay far exotic places, Mount Rath, Dublin, Moscow, Kathmandu. Behind the station at Bird Hill and home, this was my Rubicon, my Cape Ocador. 20 to 9 and 10 to 4, propped by familiar fields in cool and Latin, or bolting into the vast uncharted through the eye of Kilmasnella Bridge. In time I grew, horizons widened. The bridge diminished to a thin zigzag, bypassed by engineers whose concrete tunnel shoulders with ease the grinding juggernauts. I too bypassed for years, until curiosity led me by the hand to that out-of-the-way meander, now hatching potholes, weeds, and refuse. Below, the rails zoomed west towards Bird Hill. Behind me, Dublin, Rome, Afghanistan.
There was no clock. Days. No watch is mine. We'd be listening and waiting for you. The rocking sound of the horn you do. You started slowly, picked up speed. Satisfied, simple need. we'd be listening, waiting for you. In the garden and in the meadow too. In Tutankhamun, Corrigeen, the Wellfield, Ardilly. We'd be listening and waiting for you. The rocking sound of the horn you blew. The 10 to 1. The 10 to 4. Those were the trains we waited for. Be listening and waiting for you. In the garden and in the meadow too. We'd be listening and waiting for you. The rocking sound of the horn.
Hindsight. It's lovely to have hindsight in advance. The foresight could wait. Hindsight did a runner when I needed him most. With hindsight, I should have taken a rain check, dropped the subject, kept my mouth shut. Without benefit of hindsight, I found an itch to put my foot in, the tools to open things, old wounds, a can of worms. With hindsight, I could do anything, save the planet, win the girl, turn back the clock. Keep this going up for over 20 minutes.
Depends on the quality of the clock.
Okay, I was astonished by the quality of your 5-word challenge responses. Never having had the experience of writing at that kind of a deadline. 10-minute deadline. I've occasionally written to themes, set maybe a week in advance of a meeting or a writers group gathering or something. In fact, this next one, the original title was "I'm Not Stopping While Going Down the Road, More Traveling in the Woods Today." We now call it "Not Stopping by Woods." Derived from a gathering of writers in East Clare, and at short notice somebody came up with a theme. Or at least I only heard the theme at short notice. And the theme was, if you go down in the woods, and I was trying to think of something clever and original to say about it, and nothing came. So I started thinking of all the associations with woods, Robin Hood and Little Red Riding Hood, and Robert Frost stopping by woods. The same bio, what was it, the road not taken, the road less traveled. And then there was a fellow called M. Scott Peck wrote a book called The Road Not Taken. So again, like the Romeo and Juliet poem, I put the whole lot into a casserole dish and stirred in a few veg and cooked them, and this is what turned out. If you go down in these woods today, take my advice, don't go alone. hire a bodyguard without delay. Bring a handgun and a mobile phone. If two roads diverge where leaves are yellow, when the wind is rising and darkness nigh, don't heed the words of that poet fellow. Go for the one more travelled by. These woods aren't lovely, fragrant, pretty. They're cold and sinister, dark and deep. Treacherous underfoot, dank and shitty, and home to every kind of creep. The hoods now in these woods residing, rootless in nature and hard of neck, ain't kin to Robin or Little Red Riding. They spit on Frost and M. Scott Peck. Basket of similes, and the music is called Dozens of Them, so excess is the order of the day for this particular poem. And it's for all those people who had to endure being taught about similes and metaphors and personification and all this wonderful stuff in poetry class or in English class in secondary school. Whatever. So, Basket of Similes. As a vampire on horrors, a stake in the heart. As a Philistine is Jews, a work of art. As a yobbo spits on a poem on the dart. I curse the elements that keep us apart. As a child in an attic fears the thunder. As a manager rails at a goalkeeper's blunder. As a critic dismisses a one-hit wonder. I rue the times that we are asunder. As a loyalist despises the IRA, as a pacifist shrinks from a street affray, as a Puritan denounces a roll in the hay, I fret all the hours that you are away. Polar bear objects to a zoo. As a client in a hurry resents a queue. As a practicing atheist spurns a pew. I grudge the miles between me and you. Thank you very much.